Well, we're in the middle of our current series, which is a stewardship series. And because we do stewardship here at St. Luke's in late autumn, that makes this the last worship series of the year. That's because this takes us up to Advent, the season leading up to Christmas. And in the Christian calendar, Advent is the first season of the year. So this being like the last season, the last series at least, we've called it Letting Go, because in this year, people have had to let go of a lot of things, and we've tried to have some fun with that. You might remember a couple of weeks ago, I shared my favorite meme I've received from people that shows the burning porta toilets with a caption that said, "If 2020 was a scented candle." Well, this one's probably my next favorite. You can see a hornet's nest with a caption, "The pinata of the year for 2020. Well, it's probably felt that way for a lot of people this year. There have been a lot of stings in 2020 from this pandemic. People have had to let go of a lot of things, but perhaps the very hardest things people have had to let go is loved ones because of death from COVID-19. We believe that here in St. Luke's, we've had 20 plus people at least who have died either directly from COVID-19 or other illnesses, and they also showed that they tested positive for COVID-19. The greater family members of St. Luke's is a number 50 plus who've lost loved ones related to COVID-19. I heard a statistic yesterday that every 107 seconds in America, somebody dies from COVID-19. So today, we're talking about the very hardest type of letting go people have had to do. Letting go of loved ones. This is also November the 1st, which is All Saints Day. In Anchor Point today, Dr. Ted Campbell does a wonderful job teaching us about the rich history of All Saints Day. It's one of the very special days of the Christian year to me. Going way back in the roots of Christianity, when there was just the Catholic Church, November 1 was the day to honor and revere the official saints of the church. Over time, as Dr. Campbell explains, there developed the tradition of All Souls Day, November the 2nd, when people could recognize the unofficial saints, the people who were special in their lives and in the life of the church. So today, in most Protestant churches, we combine those notions on November the 1st, All Saints Day, and we recognize and honor the members of the church who died in the faith this year. One of the saints of the church for me was Bishop Mike Coyner. Bishop Mike, as many people called him affectionately, is one of the reasons I'm here at St. Luke's today. He was the Bishop of Indiana who appointed me here in 2011. He retired in 2016. Last Christmas Eve, he learned that he had a very aggressive form of cancer, and it was spreading rapidly. Of course, Bishop Mike and Marcia have been active members of St. Luke's. Marcia, in fact, is a member of our staff, one of our handbell choir directors. Well, just within a couple of weeks of that diagnosis, Bishop Mike passed away. And shortly before his death, he wrote a blog. He was quite a writer. He would write a number of blogs, and he wrote a little short blog about his experience of dying. Listen to what he said. "I find my own prayers go through three stages, not necessarily linear. First, why me? Which leads toward a pity party. Then number two, why not me? Which leads to the realization that being a Christian is not a guarantee of a life without problems, but a promise that God is with us in the midst of problems. And then number three, it's not about me, which leads to the greatest prayer of Jesus, thy will be done. The more I can live in three, the more peace I can find." I shared that the Sunday after Bishop Mike's funeral, and I share it again today because it reflects the same attitude of the Apostle Paul talking about his own death. That is a major reason Paul wrote to the Philippians, to prepare them for letting go of him. So today, we're not going to go and take a tour of Philippi. We're not going to go climb on rocks and ruins. It's kind of a cold, blustery day. So we're going to stay inside, and we're going to reflect for a little while about the special relationship between Paul and the Philippians. I believe if you ask Paul, which was your favorite church of all the ones you started, he would say, oh, Philippi, Philippi. There was a deep affection between them. We can believe that Philippi was the only church that had all women in leadership, started by Lydia. Paul also mentions Euodia and Syntyche. It was a church that gave gifts to support Paul, him personally as well as his ministry. They prayed for Paul and Paul for them. They shared fully in Paul's ministry. In fact, just listen to how Paul starts the letter in talking about the people. I thank my God every time I remember you. It is right for me to think this way about all of you because you hold me in your heart. How I long for all of you with the compassion of Jesus. Paul didn't speak this way about any other community of faith. This was a very close and special relationship. And after the preliminary niceties, in verse 12, Paul finally gets around to talking about the reason that he's writing them. I want you to know, beloved, that what has happened to me has actually helped to spread the gospel. Paul is in prison. He's writing to the Philippians in response to a letter he had received from them. They're worried about Paul. They have heard the news that he is in prison, and they want to know how he's doing. They're concerned. There were no telephones, no internet, no way to text or to Zoom with Paul. All they had were rumors, and you know how rumors work. Every time a fact or a story gets retold, it gets embellished a little bit more. By the time the news of Paul's imprisonment reaches Philippi, I can imagine there were people saying, oh, I heard he's about to die. And somebody else says, oh, I heard that he did die. So they get together and they write a letter. Paul, please let us know, how are you doing? And they put some gifts with it. And they send it to Paul by way of a young man named Epaphroditus. Paul was the only pastor they had ever known. They had come to faith under Paul's ministry, and they're worried sick. And Paul knew that chances were likely he would never see them again. And he needs to have a frank and honest conversation with them about death. So when he gets around to his point, he says, I want you to know that what's happened to me has advanced the gospel. I have been able to share my faith with the imperial guards. And you can imagine in Philippi that the person who's reading this letter before the church sets it down and says, isn't that so like Paul? Here's a bad situation and he's looking at the bright side of it. It's just like when he was here. And he was in prison, and he brought the jailer to faith, and right there is the jailer who is now a part of the church. They're all going, yep, that is so like Paul, and they're breathing easy to know that he's well. And then Paul kind of procrastinates for a little bit and comes back now to the topic, which is the beginning of our scripture reading that we heard a moment ago. I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. It's my eager expectation and hope that I will not be put to shame in any way, but that by my speaking with all boldness, Christ will be exalted now as always in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, living is Christ, and dying is gain. What did Paul mean? Well, there are some people who say, sports is my life. I live for sports. There are some people who say, work is my life. I live for my work. Paul said, I live for Christ. I want everything about my life to advance the gospel, but you know that doesn't mean my life has been easy. I've been beaten nearly to death. I've been in prison. I've been shipwrecked. I've been bitten by snakes. But one day I'm going to die and I'm going to be with Christ and there won't be any more suffering or affliction. One day it is not going to be like looking through a dark glass at the world. We're going to see everything clearly. Death is going to be a gain. I want you to know I've made peace with my death. I'm okay. But that was not the only reason Paul was writing to the Philippians. He wasn't writing just to let them know he's okay. He's also concerned about them. He's concerned about how they're going to do the day they learn he has died. It's one thing to be confident about our own death. It's another thing to be the person who has to go on through life when you have lost someone you love. Paul's concerned about them. And this is where Paul begins writing some of the most peculiar sentences in all of his letters in the New Testament. The phrases in Greek now suddenly become awkward and disjointed, and scholars are not quite sure exactly what Paul is trying to say. Listen for yourselves. If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. And I do not know which I prefer. I'm hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary for you. How would you feel if you got a letter like that from a friend? Somebody who said, oh, if I live long enough, I can't wait to come see you. But, I don't know. I think I prefer to stay here and die. Some scholars say that this reflects Paul's mental anguish. He's been in prison for a long time, and the stress is taking a toll, and he's beginning to lose his senses. But if you read on in the letter, Paul is quite lucid. Other scholars say this isn't a reflection of Paul under mental anguish. It's a reflection of Paul practicing emotional distancing. We know how that works. When you dread a separation or a goodbye, it's easy to begin withdrawing much, much earlier. So when the final goodbye comes, it'll just be easier. But when you turn to the very next chapter, Paul reminds them about the young man who brought the letter to them, Epaphroditus, that he nearly died, that they would understand this. And Paul was so thankful that God not only spared him, but spared Paul, because Paul says, I would have suffered sorrow upon sorrow. There's no emotional distancing going on there. So why does Paul write to the Philippians in such a peculiar way? I believe it's because he's writing to people he dearly loves and talking about death, and it's hard. If you were asked to write an essay on your Christian understanding of death, you'd probably be able to put together at least a few sentences that made sense, maybe reference some scripture, perhaps even quote somebody well known. But what if you were asked to write a letter to a friend who's going through the loss of someone they love? How do you even start that letter? It's hard to know what to say. My wife Susan's mother died about 4 years ago. And at the very start of this pandemic, back in March, we brought her dad to live with us. He lives with us permanently now. We're making a Hoosier out of him. In fact, you IU fans will be so proud of him because last Saturday he was pulling for IU against Penn State. So he's becoming a Hoosier. Well, Susan was talking to him this week. And she said, "Dad, you used to always say, 'This is the greatest day of my life,' but you don't say that anymore. Why?" He looked at her and he said, "My wife died." But I live here now with you and Rob, and I'm thankful. And life is good. What do you say? Susan just took him by the hand and said, "Let's go for a walk." Well, Paul could not take the Philippians by the hand. He couldn't walk with them. And he knew that when the day comes that they learn about his death, they're going to have to face that walk on their own. All he could do then was to write to them. I'll admit, it's hard to understand what Paul is saying. It's hard to make sense of it. But I take note of what Paul doesn't say. He doesn't say to them, "Oh, you'll get over it. Just give it a little bit of time. You'll be fine. You'll get a new pastor one day. You won't even remember the name of Paul." He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, "Oh, just focus on positive things. Think about happy things. Don't focus on your grief." Yes, Paul talked about joy. Joy was the theme of the letter to the Philippians, but it wasn't joy in denial of pain. He doesn't say, "Oh, you'll get over it. Just focus on happy things." So what exactly does Paul say to the Philippians to get them ready to let go of someone they love? Well, hear again for yourself the words Paul wrote. "I know that I will remain and continue with all of you for your progress and joy and faith, so that I may share abundantly in your boasting in Christ Jesus when I come to you again. Only live your life in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent and hear about you, I will know that you are standing firm in one spirit, striving side by side with one mind for the faith of the gospel." This is what I believe Paul is saying there. These aren't Paul's words, these are mine. But this is what I believe Paul is saying. I believe he is saying to the people, "I know I'm going to see you again. If I have my druthers, I'm going to see you in this life. But I'm going to choose to keep living as long as I draw breath with the expectant hope that whether it's this life or the next, we're going to see each other again. And if it's not until the next life, I know that for you, going on now will not be easy. I know it'll be painful. I know it will be hard. But keep going. I want you to keep going. Don't quit living because you're sad. Keep doing what God made you to do. And as you do it, I believe you're going to find God coming alongside you and giving you hope. I'm no New Testament scholar, but I believe that's what Paul was saying. And not only that, I believe it's true. One of the members of St. Luke's we're recognizing today, who died this year from COVID-19, is Ed Siegel. Ed Siegel was a high school basketball coach for many years at Pike High School. In fact, he's in the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. Ed and his wife, Carmen, have three children, Mark, David, and Julie. And the Sunday after Ed's death back in April, I told the story about their son, Mark, who was an outstanding basketball player, played for Ed in high school and then went to the University of Evansville and was a part of the team that died in a tragic plane crash in 1977. I told how some weeks after that event, Ed came to see Carver McGriff, the pastor of St. Luke's at the time, and he said to Carver, "I can't go back. I can't go back to coaching again." And Carver said, "Ed, if you didn't, it's understandable. Nobody would hold it against you." But then with words that had to be wisdom from God, Carver said to Ed, "I just want to ask you one thing. What would Mark say to you?" And Ed said, "Oh, I know what he would say. He would say, 'Dad, get back on the bench.'" And Ed did. And he kept coaching and influenced another generation of young boys, one of them being our current governor, Eric Holcomb. Well, a few days after that, I got a letter from Carver McGriff. He had watched the service that morning. And he shared with me another story I didn't know. I just want to read his letter to you. "I was pleased to hear your reference to Ed Siegel. The story's true, and it brought back many memories. The moment I was called about the plane crash, I dashed over to the Siegel home and spent the next 12 hours with Ed and Carmen. There was a rumor that one player had survived, and Ed was certain it was Mark. The communication with the parents of the players was very little. No details were known for hours. Of course, everyone perished. Later, Ed shared with me that younger brother David made it clear to him that he was not going to be another Mark, who was a star basketball player. Mark was only a freshman on that college team and was to start the game where the team was headed that night, a rarity for a freshman back then. Well, a couple of years went by. I wasn't a high school basketball watcher, so I never attended a Pike game, but they were in the playoffs and Pike had a crucial game that Friday, so I went. David was on the team. Pike was trailing by 7 points. I came home and wrote notes on the game. There were less than 2 minutes left to play when David hit a basket. Timeout. Pike down by 5. Back on the court, other team misses. Pike player gets basket. Down by 3. Ed racing up and down the sideline, shouting to the team. Timeout, other team. Pike gets ball. David moves to what would be beyond the 3-point line today. Shoots, hits. Pike down 1. Other team with ball. Game almost over. Other player risks a shot. Misses. Ball fired out to David. Frantic shot from about free throw line. Ball rings the basket. In it goes. Pike wins. What a movie that would have made. I told Ed, I hope Mark was watching. Well, I reached out to the family to make sure they'd be okay with me sharing this story, and David sent an email back to me. Wonderful that we've all had a chance to connect together through this email. Very meaningful and heartfelt. Carver was with our family every step of the way regarding Mark's passing. Carver gave so much love, kindness, and support. I'm sure he was concerned about how this chubby 13-year-old boy with a big heart was going to emotionally handle the passing of his brother. As I said, he was always a loving, caring, and reassuring, important presence in my life. Same with Dad, Mom, and Julie. He deeply helped us get through the darkest days. What do you say to someone who's had to let go of a person they've loved? You say, keep doing what God has made you to do. No, it's not easy. It's challenging. But you don't give up. You keep going. And you trust that along the way, Christ comes alongside of you and you find hope again.